welcome to today's Job Seeker broadcast. Our topic is the benefits of military service for your job search. Those of you listening who, like myself or prior military, may really be surprised when you learn how your prior service gives you a significant competitive edge in your job search. And to join me in this discussion is another service veteran, Counselor Tom Board, Denver, Colorado. Tom is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website, and you can see Tom's picture and bio. Just click Preferred Counselors on our toolbar. Hello there, Tom.
Hi, John. Glad to be with you today.
To be with you. And you and I are going to be reaching back into the pages of history and bringing that up to the forefront here. Tom has been assisting men and women with their career advancement since 1990, and that's over 23 years. He has a master's degree in counseling and oversees his private counseling practice in the Denver area. Since 1990, Tom has completed over 2,500 career advancement assessments using the IDEC Career Match. And Tom, you and I are going to be discussing our job seeker topic, the benefits of military service, for the first 30 minutes of our show. And then we'll take a short break and begin to answer questions that we have received, questions related to job hunting and resume preparation. So, Tom, let's get right into this topic of how prior military service can give the job hunter a significant competitive edge. And with all the military servicemen and women returning from the Middle East, we thought this topic would be most appropriate. And, Tom, I think it's good that you and I give a little bit of a bio that we've been there, done that. I'm a Vietnam veteran with the U.S. Army and served a tour during 1971. And, Tom, tell us just a short snapshot of your military experience.
I was involved with the Navy in my college years and really had some opportunities to be able to do some, experiences on different ships during that time.
So we've got the Navy and the Army represented, and let's just expand your Navy to include Marines, and I think we'll cover Air Force just very nicely. Now, we have, in preparation for this show, you and I have identified three major categories of benefits. And I really do think our listener is going to be surprised when they realize what they took for granted way back in the military has a huge benefit to today, particularly with today's workforce. The new emerging workforce is coming right out of college. So these three benefits in just a thumbnail are: military experience provides a very positive work attitude. Secondly, military experience provides job skills, which are transferable to any type of work. And third, military experience instills a superior level of job performance while under stress. Now, what we're saying to the job seeker is that these are very real facts that any soldier has, with just a minimum of 2 years' experience, has acquired without even thinking about it. It's just happened. And yet, in the job hunting process, unless the job seeker clearly communicates their the skills and their work ethic gained from the military, that employer, unless they are prior military, will not see it as big an advantage as it really is. It's almost like saying if you're in scouting, you understand the huge asset of being an Eagle Scout, what that says about the individual who accomplished that. But if you've never been in scouting, you know, eagles, hawks, seagulls, what, you know, what's the big deal here? So, Tom, let's you and I begin the dialogue in terms of prior military providing a positive work attitude. Why don't you take a slice at this, and then I'll pick up on a few thoughts to supplement yours.
Okay, all right. Well, I think one of the first things that I think of when it comes to anyone that's been involved with the military, just because of the way there's training, that there's going to be many times the attitude of a strong work ethic and a very strong element of being self-disciplined, that there's something that they instill in you to really do your best, to really work hard, to really take on whatever you're responsible for. And I think that's a very strong element that would probably be in all the services. I think another one that I would add to it, just because of the nature of the military, is that there's a respect for authority. Mm-hmm. They understand structure, and they respond to that, and they know how to work with that. Many times, especially with in our culture, Gen Yers, that is the opposite. That is not how they usually think. And so for many employers, this is a very refreshing thing where there's a lot of respect that they have for their bosses. I think with that, another one I would add to it is that they have a deep sense of responsibility for their duties. I mean, that is a very strong element of all the branches, is doing your duty, that there's a part that they're playing in the whole that really leads to a greater success, and they're willing to kind of put themselves to that, whatever that part might be. And I think because of that, there's just a deep respect for the part that they play, and therefore they work hard at that. So that those are some of the attitudes, as I've been thinking about that as we chatted a little bit the other day, that I think are very, very important here.
Yeah, and certainly we're both in agreement on this. We both experienced this.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that possibly the prior military service person doesn't realize is those that have no military experience, they don't know what it's like to go 24/7. They don't know what it's like to go 7 days a week without a break. They don't know what it's like to have to, in a sense, salute when you really don't agree or are willing to support the senior person. But it's instilled in you, no matter what, you obey authority. And if you don't, you get into deep, deep, you get in big problems, big trouble. There's a shaping process that happens in the military where it's second nature. You never buck authority. You never go around and try to finagle. You never question orders. The non-military person is going to be bristling when they hear this, because sometimes the subordinate really has the better idea. The problem is when people's lives are on the line, the entire military establishment has to rely on orders being followed, orders that come from the top, without question. So there's this sense of a very highly tooled, positive work attitude that becomes second nature that soldier is bringing to a future employer. The employer does not have to worry whether this individual is going to be submissive to directives, to be respectful, to take responsibility. It's all there. And what we're saying, same things over and over, trying to provide for the listener vocabulary that they would use to project what they're bringing as an asset to this future employer. So we're talking about a positive employee here who is not, and use a, you know, a lay term, is not a slacker.
That's
okay,
correct.
Let's go to the second key advantage here. Military experience provides job skills which are transferable to any type of work. And as you and I talked about this in preparation, Tom, we did distinguish between the enlisted, the non-commissioned officers, and the officers. There is something to say about those that are officers. They do receive more training in leadership and management because officers are responsible for a group of other individuals, and they have to know how to efficiently and in a very effective, organized way carry out the activities of those individuals. So there is something to say in the area of management and leadership of skills that are across the board, nonprofit, for-profit, small company, big company, family-owned business, new startup, it applies. Now, in addition to this, we also have the soldiers' military occupational skills, whether they're welding or auto repair or sonar, some IT application, human resources, finances, transportation. It goes across the board. Just depends on what particular branch the individual has served in. One thing, Tom, that I think surprised both of us when we stumbled on this was that looking at military and comparing it to corporate America or nonprofit America, we realized that in order for military to succeed, it must be a highly fine-tuned, organized system. There's a field manual, a training manual, an operating manual for just about every single piece of equipment, directive, activity, procedure. And the soldier gets used to this because it's just hammered into them. There's always a book for something. There's always a procedure. And there's always a right way and a wrong way to do everything. And everyone is expected to learn that. And what it does is it imposes a structure. Someone who never experienced military doesn't have that exposure to how can you efficiently run a huge operation so everyone's on the same page. Well, take a look at the military, and we see exactly a system that's been fine-tuned over centuries and how they get about it. Well, I'm just waxing eloquent here, Tom. Give us some more skills that you feel really empower that job seeker that they bring to an employer.
Well, I think, you know, along with what you're saying here, John, I totally agree with it. There's just a certain sense of awareness that they bring that will be very responsible orientated, meaning that they're going to be thinking about, you know, where do I fit? What can I bring to this? They're going to be asking good questions as far as how procedures operate, how they do that. And they're really wanting to really bring...
Tom, we need to take a break, and we'll pick it up after the break.
Okay, right. John, we have a short two-minute break. Today we have been talking about job search tips, but you do a lot more for men and women who are struggling with mid-career issues.
That's right, Evan, we do. We help men and women find that career sweet spot which can give their life meaning and purpose.
Well, tell me, John, what does a poor job fit look like, say, for someone in their mid-40s?
Well, Evan, that time can actually be one of despair or even great opportunity.
What do you mean, despair or opportunity? Those appear to be opposites.
Well, they are. A person in their mid-40s is beginning to realize that the first half of their work life is over, and yet they have developed a very deep habit pattern.
What kind of pattern?
Well, the pattern of going to work and putting up with less than a fulfilling job. The pattern of not looking forward to doing something with meaning and purpose. The pattern of seeing the glass half empty rather than half full.
Wait a minute. This is sounding like the old power of positive thinking.
Yeah, I guess so, in a way. I am saying that each person has to look at him or herself in the mirror and ask, do I have what it takes to make a difference, to break out of the routine and set a new course?
Well, hold it right there. I see a surge coming on, and we have run out of time on this break. Just keep that momentum and continue to tell us about breaking the old habits and setting a new course when we have our next break, okay?
Yeah, that's fine with me.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDEC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority for discussion. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's return to our broadcast.
And we are back to our Job Seeker broadcast today. Our topic is the benefits of military service for your job search. And I'm joined by Tom Board from Denver, Colorado, who is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website. And Tom's picture and bio is right there. Just click on preferred counselors. Tom, just before the break, you were talking about the second advantage to the prior military service soldier in terms of job skills, and you were talking that one of the skills is almost appreciating and internalizing being very responsible as a key asset. And then the music and the break cut us off. So just pick us up where you were cut off, and let's keep going on this.
Okay. Well, where that really fits in is that many times folks in the military or whatever they've been trained, what their specialty has, just in general, they have an ability because they are responsible. They know how to maintain and store equipment, how to care for materials in a safe manner, and how to operate whatever equipment they might be responsible for and how to keep it maintained. All of that is a part of their training in a way that they take hold of that and they bring that to whatever job that they're going to be doing. Is they want to know how to do that, and they're going to do that well because it's just been ingrained in them to be able to do that.
Yeah, and I would say even though we didn't like it, we were taught it right the first time, and when you contrast that with someone who hasn't had this kind of training, and nobody likes to do it exactly this way. You get that rebellion in kids as they're growing up. Well, here's a new employee who has been trained right the first time, doesn't even think twice about it, and doesn't even complain when they have to follow proper procedures, especially safety procedures, when operating something, or you clean it up before you put it away. You put it away exactly in this place so the next person can find it. And then there's always that huge issue of the paperwork. Well, that's part of the job in the military is the paperwork, especially if you're an officer. The paperwork even has its own manuals of how to fill it out and how to document. The other thing that I think is interesting, we learned in the military that things don't always work out the way you were trained or expected to do. And one of the things is learning how to make do when plans fall apart. That's also ingrained in military. You've got the mission is still important, and even though someone was injured or the vehicle broke down or you're out of gas, you still have to accomplish the mission and you make do. And that for employers is huge. So That means when you say it'll be done by Friday, it gets done, no questions asked. Let's go to the third benefit category, Tom, and that's military experience instills a superior level of job performance while under stress. I think I was surprised when this evolved out of our discussion. It is so second nature, I never even thought of it as a benefit, but it's a huge benefit. Take us down this road.
I think, you know, I've actually spent a little more time thinking about this, and I actually have a former client that this fits perfectly. He was in the Army. He was a helicopter pilot in both Iraq and in Afghanistan, and eventually went into special ops for a number of years and left the military as a major. And he was trying, he came to me, we were talking about his talents and thinking through his life, and he eventually got a job with a company in Alaska that is one of the oil companies up there. And just several months ago, I don't know if you remember, but there was a rig that broke loose. He was the guy that was responsible to figure out how to get that thing safely to a place where it wasn't going to cause any more environmental damage. And his whole job was supply, it was procurement, it was handling all this material. And, you know, I've had a chance to talk with him, and, I mean, he just spent weeks on this, but it brought back all of his training in the military, how to handle the crisis and to pull together all these people and to begin to handle something that they were not – they had some preparation for it, but obviously when that happens, they're not expecting that. And that is exactly, I think, what happens with everyone that's been involved with the military, is that all of them – are trained in a way that's putting them under pressure, under stress, and kind of having a clarity of mind to perform and to kind of think through, problem solve as best they can in those situations. And I think that's just a huge element to what they bring to any corporation, any company, is the ability to be able to handle that kind of pressure and that kind of shifting of situations that some people would just kind of crater into that. They're just very used to it.
Yeah. Well, I even remember during training, I was in the Vietnam era, and we would have these combat soldiers training us before we were deployed to go in country, and they would do these extreme things to, you know, I thought psych us up or motivate us. You know, I'd roll my eyes and say, give me a break. What is your problem? And, you know, I was kind of a cocky college guy, and what that person was doing was trying to translate the absolute bedlam and horror that a soldier has to work under when there are grenades and bullets and aircraft and bombs and blood, and people are dying, and still have to get the job done. And so, as a matter of fact, the entire military system has that understanding that this vehicle needs to operate when there's extreme pressure and stress and chaos. This water system needs to operate, this financial system needs to operate, this medical system, and it just goes on and on and on. That there's that common link that this is not operating in some safe island in Hawaii. This is operating under duress, and it could be windstorm, it could be fallout from some explosion. You hear in the Middle East where you have these roadside bombs, well, you have the roadside bomb, you still have to keep going. And so it's almost after a while, it becomes second nature. You understand that, and you come to now the home country, you come out of the battlefield back to the homeland, so to speak. You still have that instinct, that capability to know exactly what to do when you're under stress. And I think a very simple thing, driving along and I have a flat tire. And I've seen some people freak out because unexpectedly is a flat tire. Now, I don't like when my car or trailer have a flat tire, but I don't freak out about it. And I think that's just due to my military preconditioning that I can't let this thing emotionally just take over, which that's what it is. The fear of death, the fear of injury, the fear of this mishap or bedlam emotionally consumes the individual, and they're no longer able to operate. And you just learn that. And it's no different than somebody learning to run a marathon. You get to a point in running a marathon where your mind has to take over and tell the body, I know you're tired, but you're going to keep going another 10 miles. And that's that mental conditioning process. And the military is, they're experts at that. And they've got all these little techniques that they use to instill that tenacity and that focus. Well, I'm just going on and on, Tom. Anything more on this ability to persevere when under stress?
No, I think you really covered it really well. I just know that, like you said in the very beginning of this little segment, is that it was kind of a surprise just to think of that because it's just such the norm. And yet it really is an asset that they bring an ability to be able to have a clear head, even though there's a lot of pressure and a lot of things going on, they're able to do that. And I think there's going to be some, you know, employers are going to say, you know, that would be just an added benefit. They can handle that. And that's something that they can really market in themselves, that they've actually been in that environment and know how to handle it. So that's really
good. Yeah, and I think it's important that the listener realize employers have to be given the facts black and white. They have to be explained the clarity and the focus and the ability to work under pressure and so on. And examples have to be given. I remember the time when. Because employers are going to typically view somebody's prior military as just a two-year block. Let's just say your typical civilian soldier is put in 2 years, as a two-year block of employment. Just he had worked for ABC rental car or XYZ bank 2 years, and do you have any letters of recommendation sent? And no. If you work two or more years in the military, you're bringing a huge competitive advantage to an employer that no other job would be able to provide. There is nothing comparable to the complete and total conditioning that one experiences in the military. And even beyond that, to qualify for military, you're pre-screened. Those that can't stand up to the kind of pressure and stress, long hours, and ability to handle responsibility, they're screened out. They may not be allowed to sign up for certain divisions, departments. And I'm even thinking now, Tom, there are even special levels in the military that even advance someone. We'll take this after the break.
All right. Well, we're taking a short 2 minute break to ask John Bradley some questions about breaking out of long ingrained habits of going to work and just accepting less than a fulfilling job. John, in our last break, you started a surge to present a paradigm shift to break away from a dull work life.
Yeah, that's right, Evan. That is what I was attempting to do. You had commented earlier that this was a warmed-over version of the power of positive thinking, and actually I admit that in my earlier years, I read about some of the leaders in that movement for the purpose of looking for a nugget or two of truth. I did find something that has stuck with me all these years. And it's the power of the word believe.
Ah, you say believe.
That's right, believe. It means that those who believe with all their heart that it is possible to have a fulfilling career, they are more than halfway there. These clients just need some key aptitude test results, which they could validate.
You mean the on-location meeting with the person who has your job?
That's right. Once they find that person, and it doesn't take more than a couple of weeks, they can make the internal commitment to do what it would take to make it happen.
Well, what if they were way out on a cloud, unrealistic?
Well, that is what the counselor should provide, a sound, mature, practical buffer of what is real and possible for each person.
John, I want to hear more about this conviction process. I'm sure our listeners want me to fast forward to learn how it works. Can we pick it up at the next break?
Sure, no problem.
Thanks, John. If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority for discussion. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's return to our broadcast.
And we're back again, and we're talking about the benefits of military service for your job search. I'm joined by Tom Board from Denver, Colorado. Tom is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website, and you can see Tom's picture and bio. Just click Preferred Counselor on our website. Tom, we were just wrapping up the assets, the benefits of prior military service. Any final thoughts or comments before we go to our job seeker questions?
No, the only thing I want to say, and we've already said it, is that I just think it's so important to our listeners to realize that if they have a military background, there is a lot that's within that that is very desirable by people that are employers looking for that, and they might not know it unless they have some military background themselves, so it's really important to be able to articulate that well to them.
Yes. What's nice today that wasn't true in my day, the general public has been very affirming and supportive of our soldiers putting their life on the line, and during the Vietnam era, that was not the case. And so we, as returning soldiers, did everything possible to, in a sense, hide our prior military. And it wasn't until Ronald Reagan came into the service, I still remember him bringing honor back to the soldiers. So we did put our life on the line, and he welcomed us home. And it was quite a stirring moment. I even get goosebumps talking about it. Well, Tom, let's take a look at some of these job seeker questions and see if we can help some people.
Okay, let's do that. The first one I have here is a gentleman, his name's Brad from Arlington, Texas, and he asks, I'm 32 years old. What about volunteering to get career experience in a new field?
Ah, well, this one does come up a fair amount, and I'll just take a shot at this, Tom, and let you add your two cents as well. The advice I'd give Brad is the word volunteering is not a positive word. Employers do not have a high regard for a volunteer. A volunteer is a gopher, go for this, go for that. And so trying to be a volunteer, meaning to get meaningful experience, when you say, I would like to volunteer, you're basically saying, I'm willing to be a gopher. It does not give you a status where what you're learning on the job has any credibility, especially when you list it on the resume that you volunteered at such and such a place. So with the spirit of doing work in exchange for the experience rather than getting paid, I recommend people use the word field experience. And I recommend that to make this more formal and protect the job seeker so they're not taken advantage of, I recommend to our clients that they enroll in a two-unit community college course, and then when they approach employers, they say, I'm a student at XYZ College, and I'm looking for some field experience to supplement my classroom instruction. Specifically, I'm interested in, is there an arrangement that we could develop here? And I usually recommend a project of some kind that can be accomplished in 3 months. So there's a beginning and an end, and roughly 10 to 15 hours a week. That accomplishes what Brad had in mind, but it's now a more professional experience, and most likely we'll get a letter of recommendation when the project is all done. And in addition, if that organization is not hiring, most likely they will provide some referrals to colleagues in other areas who are hiring. So that's my 2 cents on that, Tom. Why don't you fill in what I missed on this?
Well, I do agree. I've not thought about it as thoroughly as you have on that, but I'm very aware that in my mind it was kind of going to the direction of some sort of an internship. But I think field experience actually is a more closer to the volunteering thing than even the internship, which is a little more formalized than even what you were talking about. But I'm really with you in the sense of the idea of getting some opportunity to kind of get in there. And I've used the same experience where getting people to take a course, take a class, that actually creates contacts for them right there. But using that as a basis to say I'm a student, I was just talking with a young lady this morning saying that the very same thing, that you are a student, use that as an opportunity to be able to get some experience by saying that you'd like to get a field experience. So I really like what you had to say.
Yeah. Well, you know, I learned the hard way when I was out there for colleges developing internships. I would call companies and say, our college is looking to expand its internship menu, and would there be opportunities there? And companies would say to me, we don't do internships. And I sort of paused, and you mean you don't have people that come there to learn in exchange for getting paid? Oh, yeah, we do that. And so what I learned was, yeah, the word internship has a very formal structure, and the employer is thinking it's a program. There's a supervisor of company interns. No, we don't do that here. We're not that big. Field experience is a little softer term, doesn't imply as much formality as an internship. Clearly, an internship is superior. However, there is a drawback. Sometimes organizations have internships with no intention of even thinking about the possibility of hiring. They just have a, quote, program, and they get a benefit, and the student gets a benefit. So I just insert the word field experience, and I think the job seeker get a lot more mileage. As a matter of fact, the job seeker will get a better job faster and a lot easier if they go field experience hunting rather than job hunting. That's just my 2 cents there on that one.
That's great. That's good.
Okay, let's try another one.
All right. I have a gentleman here named George. He's from Toronto, Canada. And his question is how can I get face-to-face with a hiring manager in a targeted company?
Okay, well, that is the $64,000 question in terms of beating the pavement and knocking on doors. And today there are some tremendous resources in social media. The website LinkedIn, once you get registered, you can find all the individuals that you know that know of you or have been involved in similar organizations, went to the same high school, went to the same college, worked for same employers you did. You can get that information in LinkedIn. And hopefully there'll be somebody who worked at XYZ company that you're trying to contact. Now, that person will not be the hiring individual for the department you want to work for, but they'll know who that person is. And so LinkedIn is a huge asset. There are millions of people that are registered and participate in that. Another important asset is to contact people you know that know people. And so what you're trying to do is expand your network of somebody who knows somebody. And what you do is you say, I'm trying to find someone who works for XYZ company. Do you know anyone? Where people get in trouble in trying to expand their network, they say, I'm looking for a job as an IT director. Do you know anyone? And the general public will go, well, gee whiz, you know, maybe. But if you say, I am trying to find the name of somebody who works for Nike or who works for Quaker Oats, especially if you're in the towns or cities where those companies are headquartered, somebody is going to know one person that works there. And you'll get a ton more mileage if you approach it that particular way. So, once you get that name, then you actually face-to-face meet with that person and ask them, do you know the name of so-and-so? And this face-to-face is so important because when you take the time to go meet someone face-to-face, they realize you're serious as opposed to just an email or a telephone call. And that is how you get that. You connect with that hiring manager in that target company. Last resort, don't send an email. Send a surface mail with the envelope and the stamp and the whole bit. And dear so-and-so, I am very interested in, and I would appreciate a few minutes of your time to discuss, and you're off and running. So, that would be how I would suggest that. Tom, any additional thoughts?
No, that's very good. I like that. That's very good.
Got some more?
Yes, I do. Got Diana here from Portland, Oregon. She asks, I have been working in a digital imagery creation for the past 12 years. My heart is being a sculptor. Can I find sculpture somewhere?
Woo. Well, the suggestion to Diane is I'm beginning to get a drift in the way she worded this question. Can I find a sculptor job somewhere? That she's looking for some kind of a list, sculptor wanted, apply here. Mm-hmm. And that is not going to exist. There is no way.
Okay.
No artist-type position will ever be found on some list. If there was, that poor employer would be totally swamped. We'll pick this up after the break, Tom.
So we're taking a short 2-minute break at the final quarter of our show to ask John Bradley how one can break out of the deep ingrained habit pattern of doing a dull job and choose to do something different. John, you made it sound so simple. You said all you have to do is believe.
Well, that's right, Evan. You recall the example to illustrate this point of what it means to believe. It's about the guy who says, I will cross Niagara Falls on a tight wire pushing a wheelbarrow. This person has done the act many times at the state fair, but now he wants to do Niagara Falls.
Okay. I recall the illustration, and then the observer is asked, do you believe he can do it?
Yep, that's it. The observer shrugs his shoulders and says, yeah, sure. He has done it before, no big deal. And then the question comes back to the observer. Well, if you believe he can, well then hop in the wheelbarrow.
Okay, so it is that type of committed belief that it takes to break free of the deep ingrained habits of doing a dull job.
That's right.
So how does one muster up that belief to get there? Take an energy drink?
Well, we can think each step of that belief process needs to come in more bite-sized chunks, sort of like how do you eat an elephant, one bite at a time.
Okay, so what are the bites?
Well, the first bite is to discover how you are gifted with innate talent. Also, that your passion or inner stirring combined with that talent points to a valid actual career.
Okay, that's a good start. A person gets actual career titles on a printout report which your career match system provides.
That's right. Then we say, don't change any habits, don't quit your job right now. Just locate at least three people who each are in one of the different careers you like the most from our list.
Now, what do you mean, the list?
Well, after testing, we provide for our client a list of the top 10 best career matches from over 90,000 options, and they select the three from the 10 they want to research first.
Okay, and from that preferred selection, they go to meet the person in each of their careers to ultimately find the person who has their job.
That's right.
I get it. It is by meeting that person that the emotions come to play.
That's right. Like, I can't live without this new job. For the first time, I get to be free to be the real me and get paid for it. I want it now more than that lousy, dull job that I'm doing.
Okay, and is there still a higher level of belief to make that happen?
Well, yes. The final stage is counting the cost of what it will take to get hired. The counselor needs to map it out, and this means if you really want this job, here is what it will take to get hired.
Okay, I get it. And then the belief sets in, I can do this. All I need is the dedication.
That's right. You said it correctly.
John, this has been a most interesting journey.
Well, thanks, Evan.
I want to encourage any of you who are feeling the drudgery of a job which lacks meaning and purpose to go to our website, www.idacgroup.com, and make contact with one of our preferred counselors. Each of these seasoned men and women are professionals at helping you discover your wiring and find the best of 90,000 career options. You will see the references, preferred counselors, at the top of our toolbar. John, we still have the last quarter of your show. Let's return to advice for the job seeker. If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley, who has been coaching men and women to advance beyond dull jobs to find fulfilling work since the mid-1970s. I'm Evan Newman, and now, John, let's return to the final quarter of our show.
And here we are back to our Job Seeker broadcast. We're right in the middle of answering job seeker questions, and to help me do that is Tom Board from Denver, Colorado. Tom is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website, and you can see Tom's picture in bio. Just click on preferred counselors. Tom, we were right in the middle of talking about acquiring a job as a sculptor when we went to the break, and my statement was, if this artist is looking for a list somewhere of help wanted, please apply. It just isn't going to exist. But there are opportunities out there. And one thing I like about this, as a matter of fact, in the office just today, we were talking about an individual who is a professional sculptor and has had a multitude of spin-off opportunities. He's made it his full career and has been very, very successful. As a matter of fact, he's gotten to the point now where he teaches. He has his own shop, his own clinic, where he provides this. He has been hired nationally to do some impressive bronze sculpture to honor heroes and ex-military. So this is a doable thing. Now, we have to understand that sculpturing, as in any art or music, is an art form, and when one gets the notion that they want to do art for a living, they still have years and years and miles to go to perfect their art form. And so step one is you need a survival job, a bread and butter job, that is flexible enough so that you can do your artwork while you are still making a living. And so you're doing your artwork on the weekends and on the evenings, and you're quote going to work. You could be driving for UPS. You could be doing 100 other things. The key is this other employment should not be stressful, because if you have a stressful job, it will undermine that creativity that you need for your art. You have to adjust your cost of living so that you can live within the budget and still have the money to attend shows and clinics and pay for your art materials. So that is what I would say. Now, Diana has to know the community that employs and where artists work, sculptors in particular. And she needs to take the time to develop relationships, and by developing relationships, she will come to know where opportunities will exist. I have one just interesting story to kind of whet the appetite for Diana. This topic of artists looking for additional work comes up quite a bit in our shop. And this one individual applied his sculpturing excellence, his natural talent for sculpturing, using it in prosthetics, making artificial limbs for individuals that had lost an arm or a leg due to an accident or due to prior military service, and, quote, sculptured. And that forms, then, a positive kind of work environment, a positive job using your hands and fingers and molding plastic and leather, making a work of art, while one is also perfecting their actual art form, that sculpturing work. So, Tom, tell me what I'm missing here. This is very close to home, so I may have missed the mark on this one. So, fill in for me.
I don't think so. I think the only thing that I want to underline there, because of just some of the folks that I've been around, is that there really is a need for making a network with people. Many times in the fine art, that's how your work gets out, is by who you know and the connections you're making and the people that they know. So when you were mentioning being around a community of sculptures, things like that, that's true. Anything they can do, whether it's taking a master's class or anything in that particular art form, just to kind of create more connections, is the way most art is actually moved, in the sense that somehow someone meets you, you get to see them, they show it, and it begins to, someone kind of notices, and off it starts to run at that place. They'll know somebody who knows somebody. So that'd be the only thing I'd add, but the idea of having the second job, that's imperative. Everyone that I've ever worked with, whether it's in music or theater or the fine arts of painting, they all do that. So that's, I want to say yes, I really agree with that.
Yeah, and I think if Diana actually had sort of a long-term dream that she'd have her own studio, she's now planning to be an independent business owner. A very good survival job would be to work in a boutique shop, a retail boutique shop, and learn about retail. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to make a piece of sculpture. It's another thing to sit there all day while customers come in and out and you have to handle the general public. So that would be very appropriate in Diana's situation to get that background and see if, in fact, she does want to have her own shop and deal with the general public. Any more job seeker questions, Tom?
Mm-hmm. Yep, I got another one here. Her name is Ann from Washington, D.C. She says, my kids are grown, and I would like a job where I can set my own hours and visit my grandchildren occasionally. How do I find that job?
Well, this is interesting. We've got someone who's perhaps towards the end of their work life and still needs income, and this will probably be our last job seeker question before our hour is up. I would say to Ann, the location of where she plans to live is going to be the most, the first and most important decision. So she has to choose a city where she has that access to the grandchildren that's within reasonable driving distance. Once she has a city, then it's time to establish a career goal of what it is she wants to do, and then begin the networking process. And the secret to networking is relationships. So if Ann wants sort of a quick fix, give me the best job that I can find as long as I'm near my grandkids. The answer to that is, Ann, sit down and put a list together of people you know out there that are employed, that are working for nonprofits or companies, and view those individuals as inside coaches, and they will get you hired. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you, Tom, and thank
You're
you
welcome.
For listening to our Job Seeker broadcast.
And so that finishes up our Job Seeker broadcast for this week. Our host has been job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John is president and founder of the IDAC Group. He has been helping mid-career men and women find their sweet spot since 1973. In addition to counseling mid-career men and women, John has authored 4 career advancement books. The IDAC Group has assisted over 30,000 career seekers nationwide, and John has personally trained over 600 counselors, college professors, and consultants in career advancement and job search. He has personally selected 12 of these 600, whom he features as preferred counselors, on his website. These men and women are independent practitioners whom John has personally trained. They are not employees nor affiliated with the IDAC Group. They have not paid any fee to be featured on this broadcast nor on IDAC's website. They are good, honest professionals who have gained John's approval over many years of successful practice. I'm Evan Newman, and I encourage you to join us next week at the same time for our next live broadcast. I think all of us know someone who is unemployed or frustrated in their job search. Why not send them a tweet, email, or Facebook note about our free broadcast? Maybe your friend can learn something which will land them that next job. We invite you to participate in our broadcast by sending your job search questions during our live broadcast. Those questions received during the live broadcast will receive John's priority attention. Thanks for listening. Best wishes, and may God bless you in your job search.